All right. Given the limited amount of time, I'm just going to go for this. Other people can filter in as they come in. This is the Blood Red Road to Petra, a personal account of crossing the Wargaming Desert. I obviously am Evan D'Alessandro, and as this is a personal account, I should probably start with telling you a little bit about myself very quickly. I'm an American from the Midwest. I'm 23 years old. I'm a professional wargamer. Beyond that, I study China and undersea cables. Obviously, I also study wargaming. My undergraduate bachelor's was in environmental science with minors in data science and international studies. And currently, I'm doing my master's in the history of war at King's College London, having just turned my master's dissertation in about 2 weeks ago. In terms of wargaming, I've been a hobby gamer as long as I can remember. I can't remember a time when I wasn't playing war games. But in terms of my taste for them, I'm probably a little less conventional than usual. I tend to prefer less miniatures games and commercial board games and more things that are very loose committee games, Kriegspiels, the weird stuff. My general rule for games is that I'll play a game once and learn something from it and then move on to the next game. The other thing is that I tend to like to play war games to learn something, not necessarily to win, though winning is quite nice. So whether or not I have a good time is generally predicated on whether or not I learn something out of the war game. The first thing I should say is I'm not the Messiah. These are my views. They are not representative of some omniscient truth. And so if you view this as a dive into self-aggrandizement, a useful example, or just a pure exercise in survivorship bias, is up to you. Now, I'm going to use a history of my games as an illustration, of my journey. And along the way, I'll kind of state the lessons that I learned from it. Hopefully, there are lessons that are also useful to other people. My bottom line up front for all of this, though, is my belief that wargaming in being a professional wargamer is a combination of preparation and opportunity. This quote is attributed to the Roman Seneca, of course. And the first bit of luck is actually the pandemic. When the pandemic hit, GOOS, Georgetown University Wargaming Society, goes online, a bunch of professional wargaming content goes online, and obviously the many, many connections conferences also all go online. Now, up to this point, I had been reading a fair bit. I'd done a project in one of my classes on professional wargaming. I would listen to every podcast when it came out the day of when I was going out and running, and I'd been playing hobby games for forever. So I was very interested in the topic. And all of a sudden, I had access to all this sort of data about it. And kind of the outcome of all of this was that I realized, oh, this can be a real job. And so I started planning around having that be part of my job, either as some element of it or just as my entire job for it. And the other thing too is partway through I realized if I really want to do this, if I really want to be serious about it, I need to really start designing games. And so I started designing professional style games every single week, one a week, something I basically kept up for the past couple of years as a result of that, because it's really, really good practice. So I think the lessons learned to take out of this are that the online content is absolutely key for those not otherwise were able to do them. I mean, I went to school in the middle of nowhere in Iowa. I couldn't really have gone to Connections if it was in person. I wouldn't be able to go to those lectures, but because they were online, I was able to, and I was able to stay interested and be engaged. The other thing too is design early, design often. As Sebastian Bay would say, get the reps in. The more experience will never hurt you, and this is a point I am going to hit again and again and again throughout this presentation. Now, my undergraduate experience, I'm gonna split into two parts. I think the first part is an opportunity I had with my professors who let me write games for projects. This is a Sea of Fire, which is a matrix game about the third Taiwan Strait crisis. The fourth one just happened, so this one was in 1996. This was in place of my final paper for my Keystone class in my international studies minor, which is, you know, obviously a very big, very important class because it's the capstone class. And so this was a research paper basically taking the place of it. I had to do all the research, had to do all that sort of stuff. And instead of turning it into a 3,000-word paper, it became a several thousand-word game, which along the way, I emailed Rex Brynen, cold emailed him, and said, hey, can this be published on PaxSims? And he very nicely said yes. The other sort of thing that happened was in one of my classes, we played a game on climate negotiation from one of my environmental science classes. It was designed by an NGO, and it wasn't really a very good game. So I went to my professor, who I knew very well, and I said, hey, can I redesign the game? Because the game wasn't that great. And she said yes to me. And so, you know, up to that point, to make this lucky, I'd been designing games every week, probably for about 6 months at that point. and I was really working on the craft. So I was prepared when I went in to design this game, Giants in the Greenhouse, which is a game of climate negotiation, which I will actually come back to because this is a whole interesting story that ends at another point. But the outcome of this is that it was run at the Defense Academy of the UK. Now, I think there's two big lessons learned out of this. One of them is that it never hurts to ask. I went in expecting to be told no on both of those games, and both of my professors said yes. So it never ever hurts you to go and ask, hey, can I write a game for this? Can I do a game instead? And the other thing too is it's important to push at your boundaries. Both of those games were different from the type of games I previously designed. Sea of Fire was just a straight up like game that was based on a ton of research. I'd never done something like that before. With you know footnotes and theoretical backgrounds, it's very heavily based on Allison and Zilkow's Essence of Decision. And the other thing is for the Giants in the Greenhouse game, that was an educational game. I'd never written an educational game for classroom use before. So pushing away at those boundaries was a very, very useful thing, and it you know, taught me to start to push at those boundaries whenever I got the chance. Now, the other part of undergraduate is not necessarily the academic side, but that a bunch of friends who showed up to play the games I designed every single week. And out of all of that comes this game, Time for Truth, which ends up being run at the Baltic Defense Academy because it was run at Connections UK last year. And I got this, I made the connection through Connections UK. And so this ends up at the Baltic Defense Academy. This is about gray zone operations in the Baltics. But interestingly, it's not written as a conventional war game. It's written as a decision forcing case or tactical decision game, which is slightly odder. So I think out of all of that in my undergraduate, there was a real sharpening of my professional game design and facilitation skills. And I think the lessons kind of to learn out of all of that, obviously, shorten it back down, is you know design early, design often, run games early, run games often. The more experience you have, the better off you're going to be. I think another thing is to design the games on the things that are of interest to you, not necessarily the things that are of interest to other people. Having those odd games makes them useful, and as I'll explain later on, you know, having games that are designed around the topics you have, you never know who's otherwise going to be interested in those games, and they won't have a game for it because it's not a conventional topic, and they're going to say, yeah, I'd love a game on that. And you can say, great, I know all about that, or I've already have a game on it. I think another thing is to self-promote. Don't be afraid of sending out those emails. A Sea of Fire was a cold email to Rex Brynan. Giants in the Greenhouse, as I'll explain later, was another cold email as well. And Time for Truth was just from a connection I made at last year's Connections UK. The thing with that, though, is put your contact details where they can be found. When you do things, have some way to get in contact with you, because I nearly missed out on running Time for Truth because of that. So you don't want to go through all the hard work and then you get screwed at the end because no one knows how to contact you. Now, I finish my undergrad and I go into my master's at KCL in History of War MA, as I previously stated. You can argue whether or not this was a created opportunity, because in my infinite wisdom, I only applied to places where I knew there was wargaming going on, because I knew that what I wanted to do. And so the outcome of this, I'm also going to split into two parts again. And the first part of this is that there were students who were interested in learning more about wargaming. And I was taking the wargaming course, obviously, because I'd applied to King's because there was wargaming at it. And very luckily, there were people who wanted to play games after every class. In the wargaming class, because most of them had never played a war game before. And you know, at that point, I now knew what I was doing. I was bothering everyone in earshot about it, so people knew there were games after class every week. And the outcome of that is this. This is a small selection of the games that I ran after class every week, covering basically everything I thought people should know about wargaming, and then some more, while also allowing me to test out a bunch of my own ideas and half-baked ideas on poor unsuspecting players. And the kind of good thing out of this is that it was a very different, even higher stakes environment. And so I got to design and run and play a lot more games than I normally would. And the great thing about it was because it was once a week, every week, I really, there was someone now pointing a gun at my head saying that game has to be done, rather than just me saying, I really want to have that game finished this week. So to go back to my earlier point, as I'm going to say probably many more times, is practice, 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 right? The more you do it, the better you're going to get. But also, I think having people who want to play games with you is really, really important. I'm from Iowa. If you've ever seen the movie Field of Dreams, the phrase, build it and they will come, is very important. I think if you build wargaming opportunities, people will come and show up and play wargames. And the great thing about that is that those people are your test subjects for all your half-baked ideas, the professional games you're working on, whatever. You can basically throw those ideas out and see what happens. I think the other thing is that's important in this is giving other people the chance to design and run games. For those of you who played Jaws of the Dragon, you met probably Baptiste, Thomas, Sasha, Alex. Nathan unfortunately wasn't able to make it. Having those people around you, people who've never played a game before in their life, and kind of going through and teaching them how to design games and how games work is really, really useful, because when you're teaching someone, suddenly you have to iron out all those little ideas in your mind that you just kind of generally brush over, right? And you have to explain how you do things rather than just do them. And then they ask you questions, you're like, wait, I've never thought about that before. Why do I do it that way? And that's great. And then the thing is, down the line, not only have you taught them, but then you start to work with them and you get peer mentoring. It's great, because then you start exchanging ideas back and forth, and by kind of the cross-pollination, you get better and better ideas and get better and better at your craft. So building groups of wargamers in that way is really, really, really useful, and was really useful for me. Now, the second part of the KCL experience is that academics were interested in wargaming, and whenever I got the chance, I would bother people about it. And obviously at this point, I designed and read and run a bunch of wargames. And the outcome of this is several games I'm going to kind of highlight here and go through. Now, the first one here is Protus Precipice, which, to go back to my idea on luck is where preparation meets opportunity, the opportunity was that my advisor, unbeknownst to me, was away on leave, and obviously that's why they weren't emailing me about getting an advising reading. So I sent them an email, and I mentioned in it that I did wargaming. And I go and sit down for my meeting with them when they get back, and they say, oh, I'm the co-director of the King Center for Grand Strategy. We're really interested in this wargaming thing. And I said, great, what do you want a game on? When do you want it by? Happy to do it. And they wanted me to do a game on the Indo-Pacific tilt. And so I designed this game looking at how that might work and how that might function in a crisis. And then you can see a picture of me running that game with them. It was the first war game that's ever been run for the King Center for Grand Strategy out of that. And that was great, because that was my first like real dedicated like sit down with a sponsor experience and like have a design meeting and go over all of that. And that was a really, you know, useful experience for me to with Graham Longley Brown's book right next to me and his checklist to walk through. Now, the second kind of chance I got was the KCL Crisis Zone. Which is a once a year kind of mega game at King's, open to anyone who wants to show up. This is a picture of my control team, who are incredibly useful and helpful to me. The leadership collapsed, and randomly through a person I met at a D&D one shot I was running, me and him got offered the directorships because everyone else was like, we don't want to deal with this anymore. And the thing about this game is not necessarily that it was especially new or especially interesting. For those of you who played Jaws of the Dragon this morning, this game, the game that basically underlined this entire thing was Jaws of the Dragon. But what I had done up to that point was I kind of had a bit of imposter syndrome, I think, as anyone will in the mid-journey. And all of a sudden, I was like, okay, I'm going to design the game and put that all to rest. And this game is probably the product of 200 hours of work. Endless hours researching Orbats, combat, hand drawing all the maps, making all the counters, 8 hours cutting out individual stickers for the counters. And kind of then I said, okay, you know, I've designed this massive game, I've done all the work, like I've proved to myself that like no matter what, I can design any game now, because nothing will ever be as horrible and take up this much of my time ever again, hopefully. I love the game, but it was a lot of work. And that was very useful to me in proving to myself that I could do this and that it wasn't just all kind of being handed to me on accident. Now, the last game here I'm going to get to in the academic series is my game Fiber Fighting, which I used for my master's thesis on the Valley of Undersea Cables and Warfare. This was important because this was kind of the last type of game I hadn't touched up to that point, which was a research game. And so it was the right tool for the job in my master's thesis. And I kind of had said to myself, like, I need to do a research war game at some point. Like, I need to design that. I need to get experience with that. And kind of this presented the opportunity. And I said, okay, I'm going to sit down and do this. And by the end of that, in the end of Fiber Fighting, I basically covered every single type of a major purpose for wargaming, this being the last one, the research one that I hadn't previously touched. And so by the end of this, and this game was finished maybe a month or two ago, I kind of like completed the Midjourney in the desert, and I kind of done every type of wargaming. So I have a little bit of a basis of knowledge for all the types of games that could possibly be thrown at me in a professional capacity now. So to get back to my Giants in the Greenhouse thing, which I promised I would get back to, if you remember, the game was designed for an undergraduate class that I didn't have a great experience with the game that was run in there. And so randomly, someone in the environmental security research group asked for playtesters at King's for a game they were doing. And somewhere along the way, they said they don't need playtesters, but I got connected to this other guy in the defense studies department up at the UK Defense Academy. And he said, oh, I'm looking for a game like that for my environmental security class. Would you like to run your game? And so, of course, I said yes. And there I was running this game I designed for an undergraduate class for a bunch of military officers, right? So there's a weird kind of causational link. And if you prepare, right, and you design games like this, when someone comes along and says, oh, I kind of want a game about that, you can say, bam, I've already got it done. When do you want it run? But that's not where the story ends, because as with my theory of war games, a lot of strange coincidences and happy accidents. This meant that I was the person they knew who could do wargaming and design war games. So when they said, we need a war game for a health security module, one thing leads to another, and they come to me. This is a game I designed for the health security module at the UK Defense Academy. It's a new module this year. This is a game that is probably one of the hardest games I've ever had to design, because it combines the four horsemen of the wargaming apocalypse, which is the fact that it's for between 2 to 20 players. It has to be run online. It has to be run by a completely untrained facilitator with no knowledge of what a war game is. And it has to be done in 40 minutes. And you know, after doing that, and after having to write it up in the way that they wanted, which is completely different from any war game I've ever had to do, and having to go through all the sponsor meetings and everything, you know, it built a lot of confidence and skill in terms of being able to go through that professional process and work with a client on what they want and how they want things, rather than kind of necessarily just the war game best practice, making it accessible to other people and for its use in learning. So the outcome of that kind of year at KCL, or my year at KCL, is a lot of experience in professional wargaming. And I think in terms of the lessons learned, I think you should take every opportunity that's given to you if you can, because you never know when one opportunity is presented to you, such as running a game at Connections UK or writing a game for an undergrad class because you really didn't like the game that you did have to play. You never know when that's going to turn into something else and give you another opportunity down the line. I think self-promotion is very, very useful if you're in the Midjourney. Saying, yes, I can do that, if you can, is great, because then they just kind of turn to you and you're the person already there, and that generates opportunities down the line, right? If I'd said, you know, no, I can't really run that game for you, they wouldn't have offered me the chance to write a Bola in town. I think the other thing is important to push yourself out of your comfort zone. When I accepted to write some of those games, like a Bola in town, I wasn't entirely confident that, you know, I could do it, because I'd never done it before. I was sure I could write it in the end, but it wasn't something I'd done before. It wasn't comfortable for me. And by pushing myself outside of that, right, I've written these games and I've gained more skills and I've become better. And I think the other important thing is to keep learning about your other interests and write your games about them, to revisit an earlier point, which is I'd studied the 2019 Ebola epidemic. And so when they said, we want a game that's on securitization of health epidemics, they said, what about the 2019 Ebola epidemic? They said, yeah, great, that works. And I said, great, I can design a game on that, right? So feed those weird little other interests that you have. You never know what's going to be useful. And you never know what's going to turn into the basis for a game. For the person just waving at me, one bit of luck I had was meeting Jim Wallman. At the start of the pandemic, I joined several wargaming groups that I'd followed, but I wasn't a member of at that point because they're in the UK. But obviously, with the pandemic, everything went online all of the sudden. And as a result of that, when I got here to the UK for my master's, I got introduced to Jim by another wargamer in one of those groups. And I played war games with Jim for several months. And then I'd previously built those facilitation skills and also some China knowledge. I've been researching China for the entirety of my adult life. And so Jim at one point just kind of said, hey, you want to be a control for these games I'm running at the MOD? And I turned around and said, yes, I'd absolutely love to. So the outcome of that is that I'm there running games at the MOD, getting professional experience. And I think the lesson learned out of that is obviously that connections are very important, not only for people, you know, in my mid-course stage, mid-journey in the desert, are those connections important? We should strive to work for those, but also that senior people need to strive to provide opportunities, because for us, it means a lot, and the ability to kind of go there and run a game even once is absolutely invaluable for seeing what real professional wargaming looks like in that specific context. Now, the last thing I'm going to talk about is Connections UK. The opportunity came about because I play games, and I know Jim and Tom Moat here. In the preparation for that is obviously I've done all the work at this point. I am a professional wargamer. And the outcome for some of you is you played Jaws of the Dragon this morning, and you're listening to me give this very talk right now. And I would say the lessons learned out of this, very simply, are the pun, connections matter, right? Those personal, professional connections are very, very important. But I think the other thing, too, is that pieces of paper matter. We exist in an apprentice system in wargaming right now, and if you want to get out of that system, you have to no longer be seen as an apprentice. And that's fine if you have those personal connections, right? I can turn to Jim or Tom and say, hey, can you vouch for me, right? But if I'm going somewhere where I can't get them to vouch for me, or people don't know who they are, so they're not credible to vouch for me, then having the thing that says, I ran this game at a professional conference, or I gave a talk at a professional conference, or I've written this game for the Defense Academy or whatever, that's very, very valuable. And having those pieces of papers is while it's, you know, a little bit of a lie, and it's not necessarily the most accurate way to judge someone, they do matter when you don't have another frame of reference. Now, I'm going to go into kind of my closing thoughts on Crossing the Practitioner Desert, starting with a little bit of theory, which is a question about whether or not the current skills-based framework or the design framework that we use is better or worse than a theory-based framework. Basically, should beginners be learning theory first and then in the mid-journey learn design, or vice versa, or something else? What sort of combination? And what I mean by that, is it better at the start to teach someone how to design a game, or is it better to have someone who understands the value of games and how to apply them and then teach them how to design? I don't think there's a distinct answer to this, but I think it's a question we should ask ourselves when we're giving people advice about how they should begin to learn wargaming and break into professional wargaming, is what they should be learning at the start and then what they should be learning later on. Now, slightly more practically, how should we learn about wargaming? Question by doing so by reading. Is reading the canon important? And I think the answer to this is both yes and no. I think at the beginning, past two books, the arguments get pretty repetitive. So if you're starting out, I don't really think there's a lot of value to it. But I think once you're in the mid-journey, there's a lot of value to reading the canon just to understand the field, most importantly, to kind of figure out what your own opinions are and where you kind of sit in the body of research. But the books aren't the only thing, because they're a 20,000-foot view of wargaming, and online conferences and online resources and articles and journals and those sorts of things are very, very important, because they let you fill in the gaps. They let you target very specific things. Like, I'm interested in AI and wargaming, I can go watch that connections panel. I'm interested in learning facilitation skills, I can go and read this paper, right? Those things are much, much more targeted than the books otherwise are. Now, learning by gaming, I've put in brackets here what I do if you want to compare yourself to me, which probably isn't a great idea, but if you want some sort of benchmark reference for something, I have what I do in brackets. And I think learning by gaming involves playing a lot of games, running a lot of games, and writing a lot of games. Specifically, I'm writing a lot of games. They don't have to be good games, and they don't have to be complete games, but going through the process of figuring out the core game itself is very, very, very important. Most importantly, I think you need to strive to play stuff outside of your comfort zone. If you play a lot of one type of game, go and play something completely different, because the best way to learn is by exposing yourself to as many different influences as possible and drawing from all of those possible influences. Now, learning by practice skills. Practice is easy. You can always run games, but professional experience isn't. I got very lucky that Jim Wallman allowed me to be a control in his games, which goes back to my point on senior individuals need to give opportunities to people in the mid-journey. But on the more practice side of it, obviously run lots of different types of games. That's what's going to make you better, is practice. But also make sure you're practicing facilitation skills and running skills. Running is just preventing the game from burning down to the ground, because people don't understand how the cards work and what action points are. Whereas facilitating the game is making sure the game is achieving its purpose. If it's education, making sure people are learning. If it's team building, then making sure that team is being built, obviously. You need to practice both of those things. Now, the last thing I would kind of say here is I have to thank the clowns to the left of me and the jokers to the right, because I am stuck here in the middle with you. A very heartfelt thank you to all of these people I've listed here, which I'm not going to go through for time reasons, because without them, there is a very, very high chance I would not be giving this talk at all. And to quote Bilbo Baggins, I think I'm quite ready for another adventure. Out of the practitioner desert, there's one last thing I want to talk about, which is a final bit of luck at King's College London, which I mean, I got into King's College London because it was a place I applied to because it had wargaming. I proved my theory and design chops throughout the year because I had practiced and practiced and practiced, and I continued to at King's as one of his students and play games with him. And the large outcome of this is that I'm out of the practitioner desert because as of October 1st, I will be doing my PhD in immersion in professional wargaming at King's College London. And if there's a lesson to take away from this, it's if you get lucky, it's possible to make it out of the desert. So if you're interested in contacting me, my blatant bit of self-promotion, as I've previously suggested to people, my email is right there, evandelisandre@gmail.com. Several of my games are openly available at my website, which is just my name with a .com at the end. And I can't see the questions because Teams is a bit of a mess.